the shirt thing happen throughout.
Shirt ripped?
Happened again today at coffee.
Gamzu Latoiva. So I really want that we should work on certain situations that Amunavad has changed our approach. And when we do that on a small level, we're talking about, we spoke about it. You have to do it on a small level and build your Amunah muscles and get yourself up. I'll give you a story. I might have told you the story, the Chanukah Satoyah, the Rebbe Pershel. Did I tell you the story? I told it to you already? No? Here goes. The Rebbe Pershel is buried in Krakow. Unbelievable. The Rebbe Pershel is unbelievable. He's mamish. Mamish legend. We're going to his caver. The Rebbe Pershel is, it's like, I can't, my for many years, everything I it was just this teeny little sefer. And all stuff got destroyed. I told you the story, right? Oh, it's such a, it's, I go to that kever is such a special thing for me because I learned so much of his Torah. The Rebbe of Herschel, I can give you an example. Back in the day, I'll tell you just a story that you should understand who the Rebbe of Herschel was. They call him the Rebbe of Herschel, he's not Hasidish, he was before the Hasidim. It was way before that. But he's called the Rebbe of Herschel because certain people were the Rebbe. You know what I mean? Like Klal Yisrael, he was like the Rebbe Reb Yonason, Reb Yonason Eibschitz, the Rebbe Reb Herschel. These are the people with the Rebbe. The Rebbe Reb Herschel, one day, so there was, every person used to have what's called the Musar Zogar. See, the way it used to work is we would, we'd have like a buddy system. Like, let's say it was me and Tzvi Eli, so I'm Tzvi Eli's buddy. So if he ever needed Musar, I ever saw him do something wrong, so I'd go over and I'd say, Tzvi Eli, there's a lot said there that's wrong. You have to change, that was my job, and he would take it. Right? That was the way we worked. It was like, and we had buddies. And then maybe perhaps, I don't know the way it worked, if we also did back to me, or maybe, Yisrael did to me. I don't know how it worked exactly, if they were like, if it was a two-way street, or every person had, a different thing. But the Rebbe eventually had a Musa Zogar. And one day he came late to davening. So after davening, he went over to his Musa Zogar. He says, why don't you give me Musa? I came late to davening. So he says, when I saw you walking into shul, I saw there was two malachim flanking you on both sides. I said, it must have been you were Isaac in the Dvar Mitzvah, you didn't deserve to have Musa. This is in the Sefer. This is a Sefer written many, 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 many years ago. And the whole story of what happened, he got up early and he was towed in a Dvar Mitzvah, he couldn't come. Anyway, one time he came to a town, the Rebbe Pershel, and the Rav was giving him a hard time. For whatever reason. The Rav had a dream that night that Eliyahu HaNavi came to him and said, I just want you to know the person that you're talking to has the neshama of Rabbeinu Tam. Don't mess with him. So the next morning he apologized. You're talking about, this is like really big stuff, the Rebbe Pershel. This is not Hasidus. This is before Hasidus. Way before, you could see.
No magic carpets, sir.
He had his own magic carpets. But we had this whole story about the Rebbe Pershel. We'll tell it again quickly. The Rebbe Pershel was saying Shir, and he had awesome Talmidim. His Talmidim are buried there, Rabbi Yoel Sirkis, the Bach, and others. What? What'd you say? It is. It's Ein Kvacha Chassidish. Herschel is.
It's Yiddish.
It's, yeah. Bishua, that Reb Heschel, Alter, the Alter of, the Apter of, I mean. Bishua Heschel. Bishua Heschel is a big Chassidish name, I think. Anyway, he was saying Shir, and he, there's different versions of exactly what happened, but he said something like derogatory or something flippant about the Marsha. He didn't give the Marsha the right respect. The lights went out. His Talmud then had a dream to interpret the Marsha. He came back to him. He said to him, this is not your Pshat. I know you can't be Mechavim this Pshat. Where'd you get this Pshat from? He said, I got it from the Marsha himself. He told me the Pshat, and he told me that in Shemayim they have a taina on you that you were so cavalier about the Marsha. You don't talk to the Marsha about it that way. You have to get punished. These are your choices. Either no. No? Close. Anyone remember? Either no. Svarim or no more Talmidim. Choose. He chose no Svarim. Choose not to have any Svarim. Only Talmidim. And all of his Ksavim, there's no Svarim. There's this one little teeny thing called Chanukah Satoira, which is not his. It's collections of other, anywhere that they found something for the Rebbe Pershel, they put it together in a sefer called Chanukah Satoira. He didn't print any Svarim. He had no Svarim. All of his manuscripts were all destroyed somehow in a fire or something like that, or lost, mysteriously. Something happened. He had one thing which was called this Kuntras on Baba Kama, which he wrote, and he wanted to go to print. How could he go to print? He was Makabala. He said, this is not a sefer. This is a child. This is my baby. And on my baby, the gzera is not on the baby. That was his approach. So he sent the manuscript to print. And one of his Talmidim took the manuscript to print, and he had to go across a body of water, and lo and behold, the ship sunk, and the manuscript is gone. Now, for someone that you know, his life is all about putting forward Torah, and this is his one thing that he's going to leave, his one baby, it was going to be very traumatic, and they had to figure out how to tell him. This story is written in a book called Tales for the Soul from Yari Weinstock. I believe the yeshiva has it. Yari Weinstock lives in Malo Dafna. I asked him about the story, and he told me that he heard it from one of the kids of the story. There's a tradition about this story. It's also written in the book, The Front of Chinuchas HaTorah. So one of the Talmidim says, okay, I'm going to be the one to break the news. Everyone was, you know, was dreading who's going to break the news that his one manuscript, they didn't have photocopy machines, you know what I mean? It's not like, this is it, it's done, it's gone, it's over. One of the Talmidim says, I'm going to break the news. He goes into his Rebbe and he says, Rebbe, I want to speak to you, I have a question. I don't understand. He says, so I feel bitter at Tzoros in the Welt. How could we say, Kol Ma David Rachman Latov? How could we say, Gamzul Toiva, Tzoros? To which the Rebbe Pershel said, you have to understand that everything Kodesh Baruch Hu does is a cheshbin, and there's a reason for it, and everything really is really for good, and we don't always understand. He says, I don't understand, but sometimes people get so sick. They suffer, they're soivel. And even if a person is soivel, it's also the taifa. Yes, even a person is sick, it's the taifa, and that's also, it's a gzeira, and it's a kapara. And he says, but even there, sometimes when people, you know, they lose their parnosa, even that's the taifa. He says, yeah, even if you lose your parnosa, it's all Kodesh Baruch Hu wants, the avoida. And he keeps on giving him examples, and the Rebbe keeps on like telling him, and he says, and even if what would happen if a person spent his whole life writing a manuscript and it's sunk in a ship, even that's Latoyva? And he fainted. And there's a crash. The Talmidim came running in, they woke him up. He said, if it wasn't for the pikchus of this Talmud, I would have died. Died out of pain. But he got me to a place where, you know, it wasn't to the point, Zundel, where I was like able to be happy about it, but I didn't die in like shock and pain. What's the point? You have to build yourself up, right? We need to have these little things. And you got to say, yeah, Gamzu L'Toyva, Gamzu L'Toyva, Gamzu L'Toyva. And we keep getting ourselves higher and higher in our Amunah, closer and closer to the Kodesh Baruch Hu, until, you know, we should never have to face something as, like, traumatic as what the Rebbe Pershel had to face. But he was prepared, at least, to deal. Right? It was still hard for him, but he managed to deal with it. And that's what we're trying to do, to make an awareness that everything that happens to a person is L'Toyva. Right?
How do you build yourself up?
So that the way to do that is, Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us small things, like, the clothing. If it was just his shirt, it wouldn't be such a big deal. If it's your entire wardrobe, it's much more challenging. But it could still go to the cleaners, you know what I mean? If it gets ripped, right? So then, the person, I'll give you an example. This is what happened in Amunavad. It was a while back. There was a fellow who was in Amunavad, and he told me that he was in the shower, and he dropped his soap, and it cracked. And right away, your natural reaction, or his was at least, to get frustrated. Gamzu L'Toyva. Okay, that's mamish, a small nothing, right? But it's putting you in the right mindset. Your antennas are up. You're connected. And if it's just a small little soap thing, then what happens if someone accidentally spills out your shampoo? What happened to my shampoo? And it's someone, whatever. Okay, it's just shampoo, you know what I mean? And then, you know, then it's your cologne. And then it's your bottle of whiskey. And then the price keeps going up. Are you prepared to deal with that? Right? Person accidentally, you know, had a hole in his pocket and he dropped a quarter. Gamzu L'Toyva. It's just a quarter, you know what I mean? The other person says, who cares about a quarter? Mela. No, that's not it. It's Gamzu L'Toyva. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to use that quarter? I don't know, but it's for the good. We are going to try to now examine different angles of how certain things can be for the good. Because if you can't process it at all, then it's difficult. We said we have to try to see the lights along the path, right? So we have an example. I'll give you a great example. An example, maybe we spoke about it before. There's two brothers that were fighting over Yerusha. I hate when that happens. You know, they were fighting over Yerusha. As a matter of fact, they managed to separate everything. Everything got divided up except for the Porsche. Dad had a Porsche. You know the story? I told the story. You heard it from someone else. Dad had a Porsche. You want to tell the story? That had a Porsche, and there's the driveway. Everything else, they divided. But the Porsche, both of them want the Porsche. You know what I mean? And the Porsche is sitting there, and they're fighting, and they're fighting over the Porsche. And the two of them, like, each one is, like, getting, you know, at each other's throat. And, like, you know, why are you better than me? And till finally it came, there was a settlement. The older brother gets the Porsche. The older brother's not happy about it. The older brother got the Porsche. He gets the Porsche. Anyway, he goes into his father's garage, opens the garage, you know, turns on the Porsche, you know, pulls the car out of the driveway. The father lived on the top of a hill, and apparently the brakes in the Porsche weren't working. And the first time he pulled the car out of the driveway, he crashed and killed himself. The end. True story. Died. Dead. Done. End of story. No more story. The only part of the story... What happened to the Porsche, you want to know? Huh? The only part of the story is the younger brother, the whole time, he's like kicking and screaming and yelling, I want the Porsche, I want the Porsche. He thinks he's saying, I want something good. He's saying, I want to kill myself. That's basically what he says. He doesn't realize that. This is going to kill him. You're going to die. So if I say, whenever I am in a, not whenever, but often, when I am at the risk of missing my flight, which happens very, very often, that I'm at the risk of missing my flight. It happened to me once. I was at a driver who was driving me the entire week. Great guy. He was doing an amazing job. Everything was like perfect. He has to pick me up from a wedding, and I'm going back to Eretz Yisrael. I'm going on the... Going from the wedding to the flight. Now, the flight's at like 12. You gotta like really, you know, cut it close if you wanna make it for the first dance. You know what I mean? So, it was like tight, but he's been perfect. Punked, he pulls out of the hall. He's going in the wrong direction. And he's going like 15 minutes in the wrong direction. He's like, oh no, I made a mistake. I gotta turn around. I'm like, I gotta turn around. That's like a half an hour. We don't have a half an hour. So it's like, okay. I'm just going to miss my flight. That's it. I'm going to miss my flight. Now, my natural reaction is to get very upset at him or get very frustrated, get very flustered, get very, like, nervous, right? Like, come on. Going the wrong way. But, Gamzu L'Tayva. Who knows why I'm not supposed to be on that flight? Who knows why I'm not supposed to be on that flight? David Olasky tells a story. He says it's a true story. I made the flight. I got there 45 minutes before the flight. There's never security there 45 minutes before the flight. It has to be there at least an hour. They were there. And they let me out. Baruch Hashem. David Olasky tells a story. Maybe I heard you heard the story before about a fellow who was supposed to go on a flight. He was on his way home. He was overseas. And his name is Ferguson. And Mr. Ferguson sits down in his seat, and he's getting ready for his flight. He's on the plane, everything's good, and stewardess comes over to him and says, Mr. Ferguson, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to get off the flight. You didn't pay for your ticket. Now, this is a long, long time ago. This is before internet and before, you know, when these types of things could possibly happen. Nowadays, you can't get a ticket without paying. It's just not possible. But she said, you didn't pay for your ticket. You have to get off the plane. He said, of course I paid for my ticket, and I'm not getting off the plane. I paid for my ticket. I'm going home. She's like, Mr. Ferguson, could you please come with me? He said, no, I paid for the ticket. I don't know what you're talking about. Go check. I paid for the ticket. Anyway, she came back with two burly security men. Mr. Ferguson, you have to get off the plane. So it's getting very uncomfortable. The plane is already full. Everyone's there. And he's sitting there. He's like, I paid for my ticket. And they're like, would you like us to take you off the plane, or are you going to walk off the plane? And everyone is like, you know, very uncomfortable. But Mr. Ferguson has no choice, right? He's getting off the plane. And he is like walking off, like very, very shamefaced. Gets off the plane, gets to the counter. And he's like furious. He's like, I paid for my ticket. What are you talking about to pay for my ticket? And they're like, you know, and they're you know, back and forth, they're arguing. Till finally they check the computer and they're like, you did. You paid for your ticket. Oh, we're so sorry. But the flight already took off. You missed your flight. He's like furious, like you can imagine. He says, can I at least call my family and tell them I missed my flight? There were no cell phones in those days. So they give him a phone call, calls his family. His family was elated because the plane blew up. And if he would have been on that flight, he would have been dead. So you're sitting there and you're like, this is the worst thing that could possibly, this is embarrassing, demoralizing, this is wrong, everything's going wrong for me. It's just, and sometimes, you know, that's rare that anyone would ever have that type of thing happen to them. But if we ever see things and we see that even things that look bad can end up being good for you, then when you're in the moment, you don't get frustrated. Because everything is good. Sometimes we see why it's good. Sometimes we don't see why it's good. But everything is always for the good. Aside for, obviously, sin. Sin is not good. And who does that? We do that to ourselves. God doesn't sin us, right? Sin is not good. Death is complicated. We're not going to talk about that now. We're talking about, for the moment, right? We're talking about everything. We're going to leave that alone. Everything else. All the difficult situations that happen to us, what Hashem is doing to us is good. It could be that we did something like sin, which is bad, and now Hashem has to kind of like fix things a little bit. Help fix things. Yeah. But everything Hashem does is good. So there's no reason to be frustrated or angry or upset or anything like that. So we want to try to speak of, I want to talk about three different things that are important for a person to realize. One of them is as follows. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov. He speaks about the following phenomenon. He says, did you ever notice that all medicine tastes bitter? All medicine tastes... Now, there are like these cherry-flavored cough drops, which means that they basically doused the cough drop in cherry. But if you would just have the medicine of it, you'd get rid of all the flavoring, it tastes bitter. That's why it's not so simple you're allowed to eat cherry-flavored cough drops if they don't have a hechsher. Because it's not really medicine. It's just it's medicine and food put together. It's not the medicine that tastes good. The medicine tastes terrible. They put so much concentrated flavor on top of it that it overrides the taste. Maybe. They don't do such a good job. Definitely without with cough syrup. It still tastes terrible. Right? All medicine tastes bad. And Rabbi Nachman writes about why that's true, but we're not going to go into that right now. But we are going to go into, so what about spiritual medicine? Says Rabbi Nachman, that also is bitter. So he explains as follows. There are people that have spiritual ailments. All of us have sinned. Is sin good? No. But that's not, everything Hashem does is for the good. So how could sin not be good? What's the answer? Hashem doesn't sin. We sin. Now Hashem wants to cure us. So if He wants to cure us, He has to give us spiritual medicine. Well, guess what? Spiritual medicine is going to be bitter. That's the cure. That's the cure. Sometimes it's difficult for a person to be able to tolerate. But very often, things that are bitter are cleansing. And what we're doing is, we are cleansing our neshama. That's what we're doing when we... So a person goes through something that's difficult. Something that's hard. Right? He has a hard time sitting and learning. It's hard for him. He wants it to be easy. But this could very well be cleansing for him. Because cleansing is bitter. That's the way medicine works. So therefore, we understand that when something is hard, that's good for you. A certain way.
So in a case where, let's say, I really want something and Hashem is taking that away from me, or Hashem, I want down for something, and let's say something bad happens in my life, I want to be corrected.
Right.
You know, it could be that it's going to be the source of my kapara, or that's going to be the source of something good for me.
Right.
So I mean, how do we differentiate? How do I know?
So what Rafal is basically saying is as follows. Let's say I'm being bitten right now by a dog. Let's just give an example. I hope that we're going to assume that that's not going to happen to anyone in Munavad, right? being bitten by a dog. So should he run away, or should he just let the dog keep biting him? Because that's, listen, this is my kapara, this is my medicine. Bite away, dog, go for it, keep biting, bite. Right, is that what he should do, or should he try to get away from the dog's bite? So this is very much the balance that we try to strike between things like hashgacha. Hashgacha is providence and hishtadlus, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't. We don't embrace these bizayon. We don't embrace nisayon. Shouldn't bring us lidei bizayon v'nisayon. Hashem, you want to bring it? You could do it on your own. But Hashem doesn't put it in our hands. So if we could get away from the dog, we get away. If Hashem wants to bring it on us, He brings it. Then we know it's for the good. But we can't like decide on ourselves. Oh, I need now, to have a kapara. So let me go be mevazim myself in public. That doesn't work that way. We daven to Hashem. Don't bring us lidei bizayon v'lidei nisayon. Because we don't know what's good for us and what's not. Hashem, when he wants to do it, He'll do it in a way that you can't escape it.
Maybe you could say that Hashem gave you the whatever it was, the science, so that you should connect it with that.
That's also true. That's for sure true. Right. That's 100% true. Question is, should I allow myself to stay in this matziv, or should I try to get out? If I can't get out, I should daven to get out. Right? In order, so I should get out. But we're trying to get out. We're not embracing pain or suffering. We're just saying, if the pain or suffering comes, so then we know that it's all for the good.
It definitely helps, let's say, when you're having a sign or something that you're going through.
Yeah.
Try to take something out of it. It's
right. Correct. Right. Correct. For sure. If a person can try, which we have to talk about how to try to interpret, try to like translate why this happened to me. A person gets bitten in his leg, so maybe I should realize that maybe, I'm something, I have an issue, with my leg. A person try to take some sort of lesson out of it. Right? What lesson could a person take out of it? That we'll try to discuss at a later date. But there's another idea, which is also very important, which Rabbi Nachman speaks about, is as follows. And this is it's a deep psychological concept. Rabbi Nachman says as follows. When a person wants to start doing good, HaKadosh Baruch Hu very often puts things in his way. Right when I just was prepared, I was ready to start and everything, and all of a sudden I got sick. I was the new sugya, new chavrusa, new yeshiva, new room, new blah, new whatever. I was ready, I was pumped, and then boom, Kosh Baruch Hu hits it. Why? Why does it happen that way? People think it's because Hashem doesn't like you. Or because of maybe the Yetzirah has a few, Yetzirah is getting away. Could be, Rachman says, it could even be that this is a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How? How is it a matana? So Rachman explains as follows. Rachman says, a lot of people struggle with cheshek. A lot of people struggle with desire. I want to learn. You ever heard people say that? I want to learn. I don't have the desire. How do you get cheshek? I just don't enjoy it. How do you get that? How do you get a drive for something? The drive comes, says Rabbi Nachman, from a person pushing hard to get something. It's a little bit of a cycle. But, says Rabbi Nachman, if I work hard for something, if I sacrificed for something, it becomes precious to me. It becomes important. You sacrifice for something. You worked hard for something. I'll give you a mashal. A mashal is as follows. In the Olympics in America, back in the 70s and maybe even in the 80s, professionals were not allowed to play. I don't know if you know that. Anyone who is a professional was not allowed to play in the Olympics. So all of the sports professionals were not playing. And basketball, it was college basketball players. Hockey, it was, I don't know if there's college, it was a bunch of amateurs, all amateurs. Came the 90s, and then they allowed professionals to play. The first time they are now professionals, the big hawk was basketball. Because in hockey, anyway, most of the good hockey players are Canadian, so it didn't help us much. But in basketball, they became with something which they called the Dream Team. The Dream Team was Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and two other people that really didn't make a difference because you have those three and everything's going to be... It was like... And two other, Scottie Pippen, I think, and what? No, he was retired already. Yeah, anti-Semitic. Anyway, I don't think Abdul-Jabbar was on the team. What, kids, they call them the dream team. They were the dream team. They beat everyone by like 40 points every single game. You know, it was like, it was crazy. These are the best basketball players, you know, some of them in history. Some of them in history. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, Larry Bird are three of the best ever to walk on the court. Don't even talk to me about this Schmeiger that thinks that he's the king. Don't talk to me about him. He's nowhere near. Doesn't touch their toes. Okay? Anyway, Akitzer, we're not getting involved in that. Listen, we're not going to get involved. They beat everyone by 40 points, 50 points. It was a joke. Every game was a joke. And they won the gold medal. Now, there was another story, which was in the 80s, when the United States hockey team, a bunch of ragtag nobodies, the Miracle on Ice, beat the Russians. Now, you have to understand what's going on now. The Russians, it was also during the Cold War, which means that this hockey game, this was a lot of pride going on over here. A bunch of American rookies, nobodies, they're like juniors, they were ragtag
every
team.
Coach bus.
Right? And they beat the professionals. The Russians, these were the professional Russian hockey players. I want you to tell me, who was the victory sweeter for? Was it for the dream team that won by 40? Or was it for these bunch of scrappy players that played their heart out? Obviously, right? Why? Because they worked harder for it. And when you work harder for it, so then it's sweeter. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just going to let it go easy, so then it's like, okay, I'm not even, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to build inside of you feelings of cheshek, desire, drive. That happens when you're up against a lot. Push through that, Rabbi Nachman says. Get over that. Even if you come, even when you're not feeling well, do you know that much? You know that statement you're saying to yourself? This means a lot to me. I'm going to do this. You know how much sweeter it is, the victory? And then it becomes more of a satisfaction, more of a pleasure. So Rabbi Nachman says sometimes these challenges are really gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming to help us. So a lot of times we have to try to like change our outlook and perspective on difficulties. Rabbi Yisrael, if you could try to think over the course of the weekend, if anything was influenced by Emunah Vaad, we will continue. Beis Hashem next week.
When it comes down to the situation, like you have something that you're building on. Let's say you're trying to get. Let's say, for example, you got something as a matana, right? And Hashem, you know, takes the matana away from you. Say a child or something, right? So you realize that's probably giving me a kapara for something. That's a kapara, but where does it come a difference? Well, let's say Hashem takes something away from me, which is possible for me to get back. I mean, do I daven to get that thing back?
100%.
I'm daven for it. But if someone takes it away, it does not mean that now you should be upset that you don't have it.
Maybe you daven to get it back.
When you daven for it, Hashem says, if it's good, then I want to get it back. Doesn't mean necessarily. No one ever davens for anything absolute. Like, for example, a person wants to marry a girl. That's a big mistake. Daven, like, I want Hashem, let me marry her. You get daven Hashem, if she's good for me, so then please let me marry her. Because you can daven for things that would be terrible. Like you said, maybe it's bad. So you don't daven. You daven for it because you're supposed to give it to me. Which means that Hashem, if you...
Wait, so the Mashkiach, I spoke to Mashkiach. I learned that there's a knife. I asked him this exact question. And he told me that when it comes down to stuff, like, you want it, and you want to ask for that specific thing, but you can't. He was like, you don't have to say it in that lesson. Say, Hashem, if this is going to kill me, don't give it to me. But if it's not going to kill me, I still want it.
Really, how could we say that, how could we want to take the fact that when you work on something, you want it, when you devote yourself, sometimes things come up. That's why we have to do that if someone, like, what's it, they give me the tip, what is it, they give me the top of the needle, and I'll...
This really...
Yeah.
This story is...
pischoli pesach ki pischol shabach. What's the question?
Isn't it like a stira? Usually, if someone thinks in their mind, okay, now I want to start doing X, Y, and Z.
So we were not saying that is the beginning of that's part of the process. That's what I'm saying. It's not that it's shutting you down. Want to stop you? He's starting you off because you need to do that. That's like warm ups. That's what a person has to do. No pain, no gain. Whatever. The pain is making the gain.
I didn't start, right?
No.